everyone. Welcome back to But What Will People Say? I'm your host, Disha Mazeppa, and this is a South Asian interracial relationship and lifestyle podcast. Welcome back for another episode. Hi, everybody. So my guest this week is Nirali. She is joining me from Texas, and her partner is Persian. So we definitely get into the conversation about Hindu and Muslim relationships and coming at it more from the perspective of our parents and their own experiences that may be lending towards their difficulty with kind of coping when someone who is Hindu brings home someone who's Muslim and vice versa, and just the really long history that it stems from, and that it is a very nuanced conversation. So I feel like we handled it pretty well. I think there is certain realities we have to acknowledge, but also giving as much of like our parents' perspective as we could on the situation. I know a lot of you will find this probably a relatable episode, and I hope it's helpful. I think it might give you some different types of perspective and some insight, and also just like the way that this conversation is changing and evolving as the generations go on. But yeah, let's get to it. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. We're here with Nirali, and she is going to tell us about who she is, her relationship, and all that good stuff. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Tell the people who you are and a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, sure. I'm Nirali. So I currently live in Texas, moved from Chicago in 2021 for graduate school. I finished this semester, so really excited for this like next part of my life. I want to get a dog. That's kind of a little bit of background on just me. And in terms of my relationship, so I had like a pretty serious relationship in undergrad with an Indian person who in many aspects like met all of the boxes of being like Gujarati. And at that time I was much more like, I would say like religiously involved or just like connected, I guess. And so like, you know, we had that intersection as well. And of course, obviously like that relationship didn't work out. And then I started graduate schooling. And so I was dating in, you know, in Texas. And at the time, I think I remember like on my Hinge, you can like mark which like ethnicities you want to stay within. So I had mine only to like South Asians because I really wanted to be able to stay connected to my culture. And I thought that that was like, you know, a really great way to do that is to also like find someone that's Indian, right? It's kind of the easiest route to like being involved. And I grew up seeing that, right? Like, you know, other people in my family marrying other Indians. And that was just kind of the norm of like what I was surrounded by. So for a long time, like it was set to South Asian, only. And as like time went on, I think like, I just found myself not really like enjoying like the people that I met. And that's not like a dish on brown men, like all of them. It's just to say like, I wasn't finding like what I wanted. And like, I'm in social work grad school. And so I think like that experience also led me to like have a lot of shifts in just like my worldview. One of them being that like anyone that's not white, experiences like a certain sense of like oppression, right? And it's not to say that white people don't, it's just that like people of color automatically do not exist in the same way as white people in this world. Right. Yes. And so I started to kind of realize like, there's a sense of connection across like any like person of color identity. Right. And I really wanted someone that understood like social justice, like what it's like to walk through this world without the same like privileges that someone else had, because I experienced a lot of, you know, realizations about that in my graduate schooling. And I wanted someone that could really like listen to my experiences and have a discussion about inequity in this world. Right. And so I think like, I don't remember exactly when I made that decision, but I decided to like broaden my you know, my Hinge. And so I didn't have it on exclusively South Asians. And I remember like in July, end of June, July of 2022, I took, you know, like a step back. And right before I took a step back, I had matched with someone and I didn't really think much of it. We talked for about like 6 or 7 weeks before we ever met in person. At the time I was traveling for my cousin's baby shower and just got to be like outside of Texas, which was great because the, you know, summers suck here. So the best way is to just escape, literally. And yeah, we met for the first time in August and then started like dating in September. And it was just like a really like nice, I think, like pacing, meeting somebody that really understood like my tight schedule. Like I work throughout school. I've had somewhere between 2 to 3 jobs, like at any given time while I'm in school. Plus you do school, you want to have a life like outside of that. There were just so many things on my plate. And I found that like he respected my time more than anything or anyone I've ever experienced like in the dating world. And so we got to just like really grow and like develop this like really beautiful relationship. And so in January of 2023, I wanted to tell my parents and my brother about him. And I think like in hindsight, there are many different, like I wouldn't not tell them, but I think I would approach the conversation differently. I'm sure you heard that from many different people. I think it was just a really big culture shock for them because similar to my own experience, like I always thought I would end up with somebody Indian. And I think, you know, they of course did too. And for them, I think they heard like, oh, this is the person I want to marry. Whereas what I was really trying to do is be like, I know this is going to be a hard kind of pill for you to swallow that I've met someone that isn't Indian. And I'm really like invested in this relationship. So I want to tell you proactively because I don't know, like, you know, I want you to have time to open up to this. Right. So there were just a lot of miscommunications that happened in that initial like conversation that really, I think like threw our family for a loop. And so, yeah, now, you know, like we would kind of really engage in conversations. They would not always be easy. Really trying to get to the root of like what each side is like really trying to say and like trying to break down this view of like, why is it that you want me to end up with somebody Indian? Like what's at the underlying root of that, which takes a lot of time. Right. So throughout, you know, the whole 2023 year, just a lot of like conversations, a lot of not conversing and about specific, you know, this like thing specifically and trying to just like rebuild our relationship a little bit. Like flash forward to January of 2024, when I went home for Christmas, like having another conversation with my parents and them being like, we don't agree with this like relationship and we don't understand it, but we want you to know, like, no matter what, we love you and we will always support you. And I think like, making so much progress in that time of a year to where I feel like there isn't this like active need for me to like push anything on them right now. I feel like I understand them a lot better. And most importantly, like we're able to focus on our relationship with each other and not let this one disagreement like disconnect us in like a really harmful and meaningful way. Right. So it's a process, I think, like, I'm sure, you know, that's the entirety of this podcast in many ways of like how tough it can be to have these conversations when there's like a value difference with us and our parents. But I think there's so many like layers to it that I'm happy to like unpack as we go. But present day, like I'm happy in my relationship, like he's in the loop about where things stand with family, like is patient, has always been kind of like from the mindset of trusting the decisions that I make and the conversations that I have. And from my parents' perspective, like I do think there is an opportunity for them to start to like challenge their mindset. But right now where we stand is like, okay, we don't agree. We're not ready to like meet him or anything like that at this moment, but like nothing changes like how much we love you. And I think that like, at least for me, it was really important to hear that. I think many kids, like when we defy our parents in some aspect, it can feel really explosive to where like that love and support can start to feel a little conditional. So to hear that and like have that validated from my parents, I think is just a big blessing to have. And I think like, I've really tried to learn a lot about their history and where their viewpoints come from that I've also really grown as well. And sometimes I think like we can become so closed off in our own like sides of the conversation that it's been another blessing to be able to like really try to bridge the gap, right? And see the bigger picture. So yeah, I think like these topics, they often intersect with so many other taboo issues like mental health, just like this whole, you know, what will people say and like defying like the views of the community. And so like, I wanted to come on here and be able to like listen to you, but also be able to share my like story. Cause I think it's time we start having a little bit more vulnerability in conversations about these things instead of kind of continuing that cycle of keeping it under the rug. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, there's so much there, but I think it is important to acknowledge, like, it feels like such a big step to hear someone say their parents' response after hearing everything about your relationship was like, we may not get it and we may not be on board, but like, we still love you. Like you said, so many of us have dealt with the conditional side of love that even for me hearing is like, wow, that's a massive step my parents never took. And it's like, you know, and we have, sometimes I have such little faith in brown parents because like, yeah, they fall so much into that stereotype of conditional love and just like making all these demands of their daughters without any recognition of the impact of their actions on us. Like that self-awareness is I think a big step for some parents.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
But part of your dating history and that it's, I don't think talked about enough is obviously you're Hindu, he's Persian, which leans towards the Muslim religion, Islamic religion. But, and that's kind of where I would think most of our parents would have a bit of an issue.
Yes. But, yeah.
Tell me more about that.
Yeah. So, you know, growing up, like there was this joke that I think made a lot of us younger generations uncomfortable, but we would hear like, oh, no BMW. I don't know if you know.
Yeah, definitely.
We've said it on the internet. Yeah, exactly. So I had only like one cousin like Mary outside of Indian. And I remember like I was young at that time. I think maybe in like my teens, like early teens. So I kind of absorbed like what was going on in like the extended family and how much things blew up. So I feel like I received all of these kind of like socializing like signals of like, you need to be with someone Indian, you need to be with someone Indian. That's how you carry our culture forward. And in hindsight, like I get it, you know, like for my parents, at least who came here as immigrants, like you are in survival mode in so many aspects outside of just financially, right? It's really hard to trust anyone, period. Right. So I can understand like this, like deeper rooted value of where that can come from. Right. So I knew like, when I first met, I was like, I think one of the first few questions out of my mouth was like, are you practicing like Islamic faith? Right. And it's not to say that there's anything wrong with that. I just knew that was a battle I could not pick. It didn't matter how great the person was. Right.
It's the reality and we all live with.
It is a reality. Right. And I think like part of dating is being realistic, like honestly. Right. So, he was like, no, like, you know, his parents have a little bit of a different trajectory than mine, where his dad came here for his secondary education, lived in Houston, like had like exposure to the diverse like city that Houston is. I think one of his roommates was literally a South Asian, like in his schooling. So very different, right? This like level of connection you get to make with people outside of your own community. He then went back to Iran to get married, and then him and his wife like settled down in Texas, and they kind of like made this like active decision. Like neither one of them really practices the faith at all. That's their own personal choice, but they didn't raise Shaheen or his twin like with religious beliefs at all. They didn't really like talk about like religion. So they like celebrate Iranian New Year, right? And they engage like culturally with like food and things like that, but they don't do anything religiously. And that's just been like how they've been raised. Now, if they wanted to explore further, like that was a decision that they could make for themselves, right? So very different, right? And so his answer was like, no, like I wasn't really brought up with like any type of specific religion. He was like, my mom is like spiritual, but no one really like practices anything specific or like, you know, prays regularly, et cetera. Right. So, and in my head, I was like, okay, like I can continue further, right? Like talking just because like, again, it's a reality. Like you said, we all grow up with it. We all face it. It was just a battle I was not going to be able to pick. I knew that. Right. Having parents from Gujarat, it's a border state. So I think like the experiences they have in terms of Hindu-Muslim tensions are exacerbated by the fact that there's such a close proximity, right? As a border state compared to somebody that's like super far, like in Tamil Nadu, right? It's probably going to be a little bit different. And so I think for my parents, like when they heard like his family's from Iran, that instant assumption was like, he's Muslim, he's going to hurt our daughter. Like all the traumas that they have experienced, both communities have experienced, like instantly come out because it's not something that we really talk about. Right. So you just hit a trigger point and the explosion happens. Right. So it was, yeah, really hard to like get them past that point. Right. Of like, I am safe. I am okay. You are not in Gujarat. Like, in the 1980s, like things are different, right? And that was like a really big step that took a long, long, long time. Because I think they automatically were just really fearful, right? We sent our daughter away for school. She's like really far from home. And this is like what happens, you know? So a lot of like really like, supreme, like extreme beliefs. There we go. That's the word I'm looking for. Like you hit the trigger point and your mind instantly goes to worst case scenario. Right. And that's why I say I don't regret telling them, but I do think I would have done it differently in hindsight. Right. Like it took me a lot of months to realize like what fears like were really coming out for them. Whereas if I knew those fears beforehand, I of course would have framed that conversation very, very differently. Right. But sometimes you really just don't know. Right. Like, I've had value set differences with my parents before. Like they don't drink, neither does my brother. I drink, like I have tattoos. My mom now has a matching tattoo with me. So we've definitely surpassed, you know, that stigma, but like all these different things, even getting on a dating app, like caused tension, right? Like we've been able to really work through all of these different conversations, but it takes time and it takes time to figure out where they're really coming from. But for something like as kind of important as like the people that we have relationships with in our lives, like it was a little bit deeper than of course like a tattoo, right?
Yeah.
So it took a long, long time. But yeah, I think like where we stand today is like both of us are like really getting to learn about each other's cultures, and I really, really stand by the belief that whether or not we choose to, like, whether we carry our culture forward, whatever culture means to us, at the end of the day, it is an individual decision. So ending up with somebody Indian doesn't guarantee it one way or the other that you will carry it forward or won't carry it forward, right? It's an individual decision that is made, right? And as much as anyone can try to sway us to have that and carry it forward, like, at a certain point, the only person whose hands it's in are yours, right? And so for me, it was important to have somebody that whoever they were cared about, like learning about like Diwali and Holi and like food and this and that, but I wasn't going to, you know, for lack of a better word, like not even consider somebody just because they weren't already Indian. Because we connect with our identity as Indians in so many different ways. It's a spectrum, right? Some people don't celebrate anything, and that's their choice, right? It's not right or wrong. So why should I disclude somebody from my life just because they aren't automatically Indian, right? Because across Indians, we all connect in different ways anyway. So that was a value set that was like, that is a non-compromise, like for me, and like him and I get to really spend time like learning about each other's culture and food and this and that. And I think it's just been really nice. But of course, like, again, I understand like where the miscommunication happened with my parents. And so like, it's taken some time for me to be able to explain, like, this is his family's trajectory. This is their history. Like, they didn't grow up with religion, like, you know, and trying to get them to see like who this person is beyond like just their assumptions that they're making.
So where do your parents live now?
They're in Chicago.
Okay. Okay. So they like live in the States.
Yeah.
Well, just to like kind of get a idea of like the headspace, because I think one of the things we always remember is a lot of our parents, especially like the kids like us who grew up here, our parents came over in like the 80s and 90s. That was like the big migration that happened. And so a lot of them have very similar beliefs that are trapped in an India that is changing, but without them quite realizing because they live here, right?
Yes, exactly.
Was there anything your parents told you about their experience and where some of their own ideas about Islam or people of who practice the faith come from that surprised you?
I think really there's trauma that both sides have inflicted on each other, right? Yeah. Like, and I think hearing a little bit more about their experiences, like, I think my dad was saying he was like, his friend like had a coworker that was like Muslim and like was like he essentially realized like he like this coworker was like, you know, super nice to him to his face and this and that, but like trying to like get him killed or something like that. Like, it was hard to learn about the history of trauma that both sides have like inflicted upon each other, right? And for me, you know, I'm like, well, why aren't we just mad at fucking England? Like, just, you know, like, of course, like when there's any two like religious like institutions, there's always going to be a certain sense of tension between these two big powers, right? Especially considering in like the history of this world, often like religion was power, right? The bigger your religion, like the more power you had, et cetera. Like, religion was really big in civilization, right? So naturally, yes, like two big religions will have conflict with each other. But at the same time, I'm like, I don't know, of course, but I feel like colonization of India and when partisan lines were drawn is really when tensions were exacerbated, right? To split a community in half and place like people from India, like that are Hindu, into like present day Pakistan and vice versa, and split their communities just guaranteed that tensions would continue to exist, right? And so I'm like, I get it. Like, I'm never going to dismiss somebody's trauma. And sometimes I'm sitting here and I'm like, why aren't we all just together really fucking mad at England? Like, I don't, you know, I'm like, I just don't understand. But it's not my place to dismiss their experiences, you know?
Of course.
It happened.
It's interesting you say that because, yeah, like, there's so much animosity towards like the whole Hindu-Muslim thing that we're all raised with, and England is just there getting away with. I feel like people in India, like, they've completely kind of forgiven England. They've moved on. They're like, it is what it is. We have a life. And, you know, they're moving forward. But then they haven't let go or move forward with the whole Hindu-Muslim thing. And you're right. I think the right lens to look at it through is the intergenerational trauma piece, because like, that's essentially what it is. Because I'm like, what is the problem here? You know, as a, you know, grew up, had Muslim friends, like whatever, lived my life, and could not fathom what the issue was here.
Mm-hmm.
Especially because, like, if you're brown, like, you know, like that whole BMW thing, the Hindu-Muslim animosity and the absolute meltdown either side will have if you bring home someone of that opposite religion.
Yeah.
You know, if you're a kid who brings home a Hindu partner, and if we bring home someone who's Muslim, it is like World War III is about to reignite, and no one wants to like hear anything about it. If there's even like a whiff of Islam near, even like someone's name, like I have, you know, lots of cousins and stuff, and if their parents find out they're dating someone and like their last name is Khan or something Muslim sounding, they've gone into like full blown panic mode already. And I'm like, you don't even know if they're Muslim yet.
Mm-hmm.
Just heard their last name. They're like, no, they are. And I'm like, and if they are, like,
right.
Yeah. So it's, I think the trauma piece is important because it's not just like racism. Because I think a lot of people just want to be like, oh, it's racist or Hindu phobic or Islamophobic.
No,
like,
no, it's
there's
not.
There's definitely more there. Yeah, no, but I've heard stories like that too from our, like my parents, about like really problematic situations with their Muslim counterparts in India, you know? Mm-hmm. And obviously that doesn't generalize to the entire demographic of people.
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
But it definitely, like, while I don't agree with it, can make you see like their hesitation at least and where some of that might stem from.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like, it's not the same, of course, but there's like a certain sense of like, so, okay, let me give you an example. I worked at a gelato shop. It was one of my many jobs in graduate school. I loved it. And like, as the weather got colder, you know, quote unquote, in Texas, like, they would reduce us to one person, like per shift, just because like, it's not summer anymore. The business goes down a little bit and one person can manage the whole shop. Right. So I would be there by myself, like on a closing shift, which depending on the location was like either 10 PM or 11 PM. Right. So it's late. And like we park our cars like right around the corner. So there's a little bit of walking to the car, et cetera. And if there was like, you know, like a white person, like, you know, just like a white man that walked into the shop at like 9:30 PM or whatever, like when the sun goes down, there's a certain sense of like heightened, like, I'm just super aware of my surroundings now. I'm like, okay, where, like, you know, like there's a safety piece that like, I just don't trust, you know, like this person walking in. And I think like for my parents, and again, I'm not trying to say it's the same, but for them, they have experienced this like really deep seated sense of fear when they were in India, right? And I don't know that they've really been able to process it. When you come here in this new country, you're informed by your worldview of the other one, right? Don't trust, you know, like only trust our own, etc. And so like, I don't think they've been able to let go of that fear yet, even though it's been years and even though things have changed in India and all these like context has drastically shifted, but I think they're still holding on to the fear. And it's more deeper rooted than just like racism, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, it's a lived experience of trauma. And that can be really, really hard to let go of, you know? So that's, yeah, it's like exactly like you said. That's why it transfers from generations, because I got to live in this country where I didn't see that same experience, right? So I can unlearn that faster than they can, because they're the ones with that lived experience, right? So for me, it makes more sense to be like, I don't get it. Like, we're 40 years away from India in that time period now. We don't even live in India. Things are different here, et cetera, et cetera. But if I were in their shoes, I don't know that I would be able to let it go as quickly either. I won't ever know, you know? So it's, you know, that's why I say it's not my place to tell them their experiences are right or wrong, right?
Basically.
That doesn't mean I won't challenge them, though.
Of course, I think some of it comes with change as they have lived here and meet people of the opposite religion and realize it's actually okay. But you know that it's tough because that animosity lands on both sides. Like,
yeah,
I have Muslim friends who's literally have been like, oh no, my parents don't trust you. I was like, cool, cool.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, like, you know, and it's kind of like, well, we would have our own friendship and understanding, but there's like that person in your ear that's like, don't get too close to them.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm like, what am I gonna do? Like this 4'11 brown girl, like what do you think I'm doing here? but you know, because it's like for us it was just like, well, you're just another brown person essentially. And it was like, and our parents were like, you should be friends with brown people. I'm like, look, I found one. They're like, wrong brown.
No, literally. and in my head I'm like, again, it comes down to this, like, there's a shared experience and that we all got fucked over by England. You know what I mean? It again comes down to this thing. And that's why, like, I made that switch for myself where it's like, I don't think someone needs to be Indian to understand me, you know, from a contextual standpoint. Like, they might not know Gujarati, but I don't even know Gujarati that well. My language skills have gone to shit, you know? So like, that's the piece that I think is the struggle, is like, there's a sense of perspective that I feel like our generation is able to take on that perhaps our parents are, like, at least for mine, like, they've made so much progress. I'm like really proud of them and very blessed to have them, but it just is a little bit slower, and that's rooted in our experiences and how different they are, you know?
Yeah. Do you feel like there was anything that you said or did that you felt like helped them overcome this hurdle of their own, you know, personal prejudice they might have? Because I know there are tons of people listening right now that are in that Hindu Muslim conniption, as we can call it, and just don't know how to get past it, because it's not just a race thing. Then, you know, when you bring home someone who's white or whatever, it's like, okay, it's a race thing, we'll figure it out. But this is like a personal insult for our parents.
Yeah. I don't know how well I can answer that question, because I'm dating someone that isn't a practicing, like, Muslim. I think it's different, right? So that's like something that I don't have the experience in. What I will say is that, like, sometimes I think, and it's valid to feel this, because I remember being like, why aren't my parents just listening to what I'm trying to say, you know? But I think I also owed it to them to listen to what they're trying to say, you know? Like, growing up, like, at least for me, like, we consult our parents on so many decisions and this and that. They have this like active role, right? And, you know, like I mentioned before, like drinking, a tattoo, this and that. Like, a tattoo was really the only one that I told them about before getting it. So like, we, you know, got to go through all the, you know, tough conversations about it before I actually did it. Whereas like drinking, I told them ad hoc, being on a dating app ad hoc, right? So I think they felt like, why didn't we have a role in this like decision that you made at all, right? And I like get it. Like, and so actually one of the more recent conversations I had with my mom was like, it's not that I'm trying to cut you guys out of my life. Like, when I make decisions and I just tell you about them, like, for example, I signed a lease for a new apartment. I'm moving in April, and like, they weren't, you know, I would keep them updated, like when we were touring, which one we're deciding to go with, this and that, but like, they weren't as involved as they've been in the past, right? And I was telling my mom, I was like, I'm not trying to cut you out of my decision-making, but you have raised me to feel grounded in my decision-making skills, that when I make a decision, I feel comfortable with, you know, bearing the repercussions of that, positive and negative, right? Like, you have raised me to be confident and grounded in the decisions that I make. So that's why sometimes I tell you things after I've already kind of decided, because you have raised me to feel comfortable in just deciding for myself, right? And I was like, as we get older, I was like, I don't want to have to rely on you for everything. Like, I want you guys to be able to just enjoy your life, you know, and not worry about me. So I don't want you to take it as like, oh, she doesn't need us anymore. Like, she doesn't care to hear what we think about things. It's just that I want you to be able to live your life, and I will reach out to you when I need support, but I will make my decisions. And if they have bad consequences, I feel comfortable with like dealing with those consequences. Right. So it's this idea of like, yes, I want you to listen to me, but I also need to like listen to you.
and ask you questions and learn more about your experiences and try to figure out where you're coming from, right? And just in the same way that it was so helpful for me to hear from them, like, hey, we don't agree with this. We don't know what the future holds, but we will always support you and love you. Like, I have told them countless times, like, nothing changes how much I love you. I think our parents also need to be reminded that our love for them is not conditional either. You know, it's a two-way street, at least in my experience. So just like knowing when the right time is to express to them where I come from, right? I think it took about a year to really have that true conversation and feel like I was like getting like them to like see where I come from on things, right? So for example, I was like, I told you guys about this person, not because I was trying to say I'm marrying him tomorrow, right? I told you about him because when the day comes that I get married, I don't want that to be the beginning of your relationship with my husband. I want you to already know who this person is, you know? And they had an arranged marriage. They didn't see each other until their engagement day. So they had this totally different experience where they built their relationship like after marriage, right? And I was like, I want to go about it differently. Like, I want to build my relationship with this person. And then I want them to be able to build their relationship with you. And for me to be able to build the relationship with his family. And then we like get married. And there's already like a sense of merging the families together, right? So I was like, that's why I told you, is because I know that this was going to be hard. But also, like, I don't see myself getting married for another 2 to 3 years at the minimum. But that's valuable time for us to start bridging each other's families, right? I don't want the wedding to be the first time you really meet his like family, right? And that can sometimes be common in like Indian marriages, right? So, you know, there's an appropriate time. I really had to learn that of when I get to kind of like push and try to explain where I come from, but it's also like I need to hear where they come from too. You know, and I told them so many times, like, nothing changes how much I love you. I'm still calling you every single day, like all these different things. We still laugh on the phone, like everything, you know. And to me, it's different than pretending like everything's okay. Because sometimes I think our communities and our families are forced to do that, you know. For me, it's we don't agree on this thing. We've addressed it. And we're making the active decision to talk about this only when we see each other in person. So we don't talk about this stuff on the phone anymore because there's too much room for miscommunication. We don't get to hug each other at the end of what's probably going to be a tough conversation. We only talk about it when we're there with each other in person. And we are deciding to actively choose to fight for each other every day when we still engage and still laugh with each other and are able to look past this disagreement in values we have, right? So yeah, it's you know, it took a long time to get there. I mean, around this time in 2023, I think I was the most anxious I have ever been, right? Because that was the month I was remote for school. So I traveled and March was the month that I was back home. So like having this explosion in my family, getting to like literally escape it and travel, but then coming back to like being in the same house as my parents again, like for this whole month was extremely difficult. And in that same time, my dad had to go to India. My like Dada passed away like in early April. All these different things happened to where I also kind of had to really like put aside. Well, I chose to kind of put everything aside for all this stuff and really focus on like supporting my family, right? And putting this away. But yeah, it's so wild to think like a year ago at this time, like it was such different context, right? But we've improved a lot and grown a lot, all of us.
Yeah, time is usually a good thing to give, especially
yes.
parents.
Yeah.
But I think it's really interesting that you said, like, because I think when we talk about intergenerational trauma and all of this, we usually talk about it in the context of how it impacts us.
Yes.
But there's very little, like, how does it impact them?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think because like you said, you were like trying to act like everything is okay. And I think about our parents and just the impact of these arranged marriages that were very much like forced on a lot of our parents. Like, they didn't have a ton of say. My mom literally was like, I asked three questions. That's what I got. And I'm like, you got three questions? And you made a life-altering decision based on that?
Right.
At the age of 24. And I'm like, I'm 31 years old. And I'm like, I don't even know how to adult most days. And this woman had a seven-year-old, me, to deal with. And I think about even just growing up, and like there were times where I look back, I'm like, I don't know how I got through that. Like, keeping my head down, acting like everything was fine, and just like work, school, double life, you know, crazy parents at home, all this stuff. And then like I come out on the other side and I'm here and I'm like, I need therapy, dude. Like, I need help. And then I think about my parents. I'm like, they've just been doing that for 60 years. Like, they have just been acting like everything's fine for their whole life. Because they got this. I think about my mom. She's 24 years old, gets married to this dude she like just met. Okay. Immediately gets pregnant with me. Okay. I'm a honeymoon baby. And my dad lived in America. So this is the other thing. She meets this guy, marries him in 2 weeks. They go on their honeymoon, comes back. Lives with her in-laws who, like, who the fuck are these people? He has now left to live in America.
Oh, my goodness.
She's now 24 years old, pregnant, alone, living in a house she's never been in. And she has me. And my mother, like, is no secret, has, like, chronic anxiety. Like, this woman has so many undealt with mental health issues. And as someone who has essentially two narcissistic parents, when you look at it, and I can be angry at them for it. And I, trust me, I spent most of my life being angry at them. I can also sit here and be like, oh, you're like this because what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, you're now 24 and now you have me to I haven't shut up since the day I was born. And I'm like, and then you have like this mother-in-law who's like telling you how to raise your kid and like all these random people telling you how to live your life. Your dad told you what to do until the day you got married. Then your husband told you what to do, and your in-laws. Your husband lives two oceans away. He comes back after I am born. I think at that point I was already like a few months old. Wow. So she's now going through the whole postpartum debacle alone.
And it's hard.
You have been acting like everything is fine your whole life. No wonder you're fucked up. You know, and sometimes when I talk to them, I'm like, you're – obviously, you have like that therapy brain that's like narcissistic parent, emotionally immature parents, like don't know how to act like adults because they treat you like a baby and they've always acted like babies. And now you're treating them like an adult and now they're having a meltdown because you're treating them like an adult and they don't see you as an adult. It's like a giant rabbit hole that you can like panic about on any given day. But I'm like, yeah, no shit. Everyone's fucked up. What the hell? Like, we just did this to an entire generation of people. What? And they're still acting like it's fine.
I think for my parents, like, what choice did they have other than to keep going the next day?
They didn't have a choice.
So it takes a long time to unlearn that, you know? And also, I think what's unique about their generation is they got married, they did the thing, but then they moved to a different country.
Yes,
and you're instantly disconnected from your entire support system. You know, it's not easy. It's not easy at all. And I think that's the piece that really exacerbates like how things pass forward to their kids and why they hold on to India from that year, like those years and things like that. My mom talks about her childhood and these happy memories of like she, you know, of her dad and with her siblings and things like that all the time. And to leave India and come to this new country and lose like the most important people in your life is so hard. It's so hard. Like, I feel that, and I'm a flight away. I can go whenever I want, you know? They would happily have me home. But to do that and like not have the money to go back as frequently as you want, that's a lot of time. That's a lot of like, just everything. It wasn't feasible. Like, you're so disconnected from your entire support system. And Yeah, it's like, yeah, well, this makes sense now, right? Like, yeah. You have gone through so much, you know?
It's wild to think about. Because I'm like, yeah, like, you think about them moving to this country where they don't know anyone or how anything works. So, of course, like, our parents insulate themselves within, like, the South Asian communities here.
Yes.
And their temple and their friends. They never step out because, like, dude, if you threw me in India, I wouldn't know how to catch a bus.
Yeah.
Bro, I don't know how to get around. Like, yes, I speak the language. And even then, everyone looks at me and they're like, you're not from here.
Yeah.
And it's like, I literally wouldn't leave my house if you left me in India by myself, because I'd be like, I don't know how to get around. I don't know what is happening here. I don't even know where the street names are. How do people go around? Do I have a driver's license? Like, what am I doing? Yeah, I would live in a fucking bubble too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think, like, the other piece of this that, at least for my story, has really, like, been great perspective is I have a really big interest in working in the aging sector. And I'm currently placed as I wrap up school, as an intern with the Asian American Resource Center. And I work within their senior programming. I get to meet all these different Asian identifying seniors that have, like, immigrant trajectories of when they came to this country, et cetera. And learning about their stories, like, I think there's this huge disconnect across generations, you know, like, of really understanding each other and, like, talking about our stories with each other, right? Because no doubt, like, immigrants worked their asses off and sometimes continue to for their entire lives just to survive. I don't know how my parents figured it out, especially my dad, but, like, we were able to have so much more financial stability, like, especially around the time that I was, like, you know, born and raised, than, like, when my parents had just moved to this country, right? Like, we, you know, I imagine, like, moved up, like, a socioeconomic class, right? Like, from when they first came here to then getting settled, to the point where when we sponsored my aunt's family to come here, we had just gotten a new house because we were about to have 10 people in one household. And our 3-bed, 1.5-bath little townhouse was definitely not going to cut it, right? We had my mom and dad with us too. And that was when the economic recession happened. My mom got laid off. And so we literally supported this house of 10 people on my dad's salary and somehow made it work, you know? And my dad talks about it and he's like, but we were all together. And that made him so happy, despite, like, is there enough money, you know? Like, I see that situation so differently because his context and my context are so different. And my parents worked hard to make sure, like, we never really felt the strain of that, right? But I remember it being a really hard time, you know? And it was just so different from my perspective versus his, because he was like, I have my parents and my sister and my own family all in one household. Like, that is his ultimate dream, right? To be able to bask in, like, the collectivism that he grew up with, right? That you lose when you come here and you don't really gain it back. And being in this new country and, like, it really just changes the dynamics of it drastically, right? So it's hard to really recreate that in America and maybe even arguably in India at this point, right? So yeah, it's crazy. Our parents have these stories, like, and experiences, our grandparents, and it really does shape where they stand today, right? So to ask them to, like, completely shift their worldview is a heavy ask, right? And it's not to say, like, do I still think that I need to end up with somebody Indian? Obviously not, right? Do I agree with them that I need to? No. And there's so much more to that context, like, than just this, like, very active decision to, like, shun me for doing something different. It's more than that, you know? There's so many layers to it.
Yeah, and it's layers, like, that a generation of people don't talk about.
Exactly.
Like, they don't sit around ever telling you these things. Like, a lot of even my insight on my parents has come through my own reflection on what little I know about their lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And whatever bits they have shared, because if I went up and asked them, they would definitely not discuss it. They would just it's fine. We're here. Like, what is there to talk about? And I almost think that's like, that is still a healthy way to some extent to cope, in the sense that, like, I think sometimes the flaw in our generation is like, we put our feelings like top tier, and it's like, you actually don't have to be ruled by your emotions all day. Like, you can acknowledge them and validate them, but like, they don't run the day.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, you know, better. I don't know if it's better, but like, their mentality of just like, it happened and we moved on. Like, what are we going to do? Like, I even told my therapist, like, when I started with her, I'm like, respectfully, like, what am I going to do? Sit here and talk about how sad my life was? It is what it is. I can't change it. It's the past. And she's like, and that is not an unhealthy way of looking at it. It's, you know, and she's like, we're going to unpack the way it's impacting you today. And like, yes, we went down that rabbit hole. She's like, you aren't defined by those things. And that is important. And I think that's the route a lot of our parents took, where they're like, we came here for a better life and we got it. You know, like, yes, it's not perfect. There were things they went through that we'll never understand. But like, they're like, a lot of our parents would just be like, I raised two kids who are successful. I got a house. I got my cars. We made it. This is the fucking American dream. And if you talk to a lot of our families, they love this country. They're like, I did this shit. And I'm like, you did. I'm impressed. I gotta say. Because most days I'm like, I don't know if I'm making it. I don't know.
No, yeah, genuinely. I was like, I don't know if I'm ever going to be a homeowner.
Millennial problems. That's another podcast. Well, I also think, like, if my parents came over now, it would be a very different story.
Yes. I was just going to say.
The 90s was like the golden age, you know? And they did it. And they're like, what do I have to be upset about? They're like, I have two, three beautiful kids. You know, some of them are married. I have grandkids, some of them. They're like, and now they are financially able to do things like go on vacation or get a second home or like do all these things. And you're like, yeah, you know what? You did make it. You did make it.
Yeah.
All right. Fine. You did it on your terms. In whatever way you knew how. There was no guide map. There's no set of directions on how to navigate America in 1992. But you did it. And that may have come with some of the baggage that we now sort of lug around with us.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, it's not the worst outcome that could have come out of it.
No, and I think at least
we're some of the most successful people in this country.
Yeah.
It's not a small feat.
No, absolutely not. So... yeah, I mean, and to the credit of my parents, like, you know, I think that they have broken those generational bounds and cycles in so many ways, you know, like, for example, like, my brother's married, he's older than me. And my mom was like, I, of course, want us all to end up in the same state and 10 minutes away from each other, or whatever. But she was like, I will not live with you, you know, and that was a really tough conversation, like, for her to have with her son, who was like very like, I want to be able to take care of you and things like that, and for you to be able to live with us, like, but she was like, no, like, I went through so much when I got married with my in-laws, and she was like, the last thing I want to do is create a relationship of resentment with my future, with my daughter-in-law, right? She was like, I will not do that. And she was like, that requires me to live separately. I will come over for dinner anytime, you know, but I won't do it. And she was like, I need my freedom as well, you know? And that to me was just like so astonishing. Like the self-awareness she brought, the boundaries she set, right? Like all these like, you know, buzzwords and therapy and things like that, that like my mom practiced. And I'm like, oh my God, like, I adore you. You know, I always have. She is like my favorite person in this entire world. And like her and my dad have really progressed, you know, like they have grown in so many ways. Like I am just like, I'm so grateful. And I know that that's something that not all people get. Right. And so I don't take it lightly. But yeah, it's tough. They've done it. They did it. They can take their vacations, like, and years down the road, like their happiness, like, for them is really just like family, and that's their decision, right? Even now, like in this, you know, tell me if this is a little bit of a side tangent to not go on it, but I'm on the job hunt, right? And in my program, a lot of like professors are like, okay, around March, like we suggest you start looking, et cetera. And my, you know, type A ass is like, if you say March, that means I'm starting to look in January. And like, I need to like kind of know. And like where I stand right now is like having, you know, an offer, but that would offer would require me to start like part-time hours, like anywhere between like 8 to 10 hours a week in my final month of school. Right. And I was sitting here talking with my parents and I was like, you worked so hard to make sure I didn't have to like have this like burdening sense of financial anxiety. And on my end, I work hard to make sure you don't have to worry about me financially. So there's like both sides of us wanting the best for each other, you know? And I was like, I have the freedom of choice that you guys didn't. So why am I sitting here like adding even more onto my plate when I could just not work my job the month of April and just finish school out? Like that is such a normal thing to do. And in my head, I'm like, no, but I don't want like to worry about finances. Like I want to make sure like I have a secure lifestyle, like all these things that like they experienced when they came here, but to a much more like extreme, like intensity. Right. But they work so hard to make sure that I wouldn't be thinking the things that they did. You know what I mean? And I'm out here like thinking those things, you know? And as I was sitting and like reflecting with my therapist, I was like, what am I doing? You know, like I have their support and I've also worked really hard and applied for scholarships and done this and that and like secured money that gives me a cushion to where I don't need to work in April, you know? So it's so interesting to me. Like we all want the best for each other and to see each other happy. And somewhere in that, there's this huge miscommunication that happens where we like lose this feeling of being on each other's team, you know? At least for me and my family, like we are, and we always have been, but in the sticky situations, we've somehow like gotten caught and ended up on separate sides. Right. But you can be on the same side and not be in agreement. Right. So it's been like a process to really like, you know, learn about how those things have manifested in my life and then make that active choice to be like, I'm not going to continue that cycle, you know? Like, I owe it to you. You've busted your ass to give me the life I have here. I owe it to you to not continue that cycle, you know? Because at the end of the day, they just want to see us happy. I don't think I would be happy if I was trying to finish school and working and doing this and that. I would be miserable, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's complicated because I think the very unique burden that first-gen kids struggle with that no one else will really ever have to cope with or deal with is the burden of knowing what our parents did to get here mm-hmm. and feeling like we have to make it worth it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like at the end of the day, no matter how much I like sit here and like shit on my parents because they do get on my very last nerve, like I am not unaware of what they did for me. And that kind of burden is like, that's a lifetime to carry. It's not like mm-hmm. a small thing. It's like carrying a literal house on your back to be mm-hmm. like, I have to make their sacrifice worth it. And like most brown parents, I would argue, kind of do see it that way. Like there is still yeah. a lot of brown parents haven't gotten to the point where your parents are, where it can be like, I just want you to be happy. It's still like, I did all this for you. You know, stop like wasting your time worrying about being happy. And so it's a very complicated and nuanced situation. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, you're the social worker. I don't know that this is a thing we like really work through until it's like, I have kids and they just don't have to deal with any of that shit.
Yeah. 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 I mean, my situation is unique. I know that. Everyone's is. I think mine had many blessings in it that unfortunately other people don't have the opportunity to experience. And, you know, went through hell to get to where we are today. You know, it was not easy, like I said. Yeah, I think there really is like a power to seeking to understand, you know, like sometimes I feel like we listen to somebody else to just confirm our own viewpoints, you know, but like, what does it look like to really sit down and listen to like what someone else is trying to say and seek to understand, right? Not to confirm our own beliefs. And I think that's a huge piece that, you know, sometimes I wonder what my social work degree has gotten me outside of like, you know, racial trauma. And then I remember like, no, it's the skill of really just being able to seek to listen and to understand context. And it's really helped me in my own personal life and in this situation in particular, you know. It's tough. Like, I don't know that we can break the bounds of intergenerational trauma without having discussions about it. But that's really hard to do. You know, the space is not always safe to do that. It's a context that's always changing.
It's brutal.
It's hard. It's so hard. My God.
Like therapy sounds fun when it's like a pastel colored meme on Instagram. And then like you're sitting there just like crying every week, feeling like you're never going to dig yourself out because like what direction do you even go in?
Yeah.
Like what does the other side of this look like? Because sometimes I'm like, do I just like rip everything off? You know, sometimes I feel like the only way out is to literally just like, it feels like I need to peel my skin off and maybe then I'll find it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's just so much that I feel like if I don't just let it go and remove, that I'll never be able to move forward. That even like, even sometimes it feels like even the good things aren't worth fighting for because the bad things are so overwhelming.
Yeah. I mean, I remember thinking multiple times, like, should I just step away from this relationship? Like, it's not worth it. I feel like I can't even talk to my parents. Like, I mean, it was hard. It was really hard for me, for him, for them, right? For my brother, like who was trying to figure out how to advocate for me. But that's really hard to do as well. Like, you know, it is just tough. And I think if I remember right, you had talked about like, you know, is it something that it's an experience that we as the first gen like experiences. I don't know that the next generation, like, you know, if we choose to have kids, like they're going to experience it in a different way. But I always think about like, if I choose to have kids, like there are conversations that I never had with my parents that I am 100% going to have with my kids, you know? And my parents, again, like when you're in that survival mindset, I don't know that they had the capacity to think about what is my kid going to get exposed to in school? Like, let's have a conversation about drugs. Let's talk about like relationships, this and that, right? Like none of those things really happen, right? And they're happening now as we're all adults, right? So I don't blame them for that. Do I think it would have been helpful? 150%. I would have given anything to talk to my parents about these things. And, you know, also I don't feel that I'm super able to talk to them about my relationship right now. Like we can open up conversations here and there. But we're not at that point yet where I get to just be like, yeah, we went to like a farmer's market today. It was fun. You know, like, I don't know that that's like where, I don't know how much time it will take for us to get there either. Right. I know that if I have kids, there are so many conversations that I will have with them that maybe they won't see the point of, you know, as a 13-year-old of like, why are we discussing this and getting all sentimental right now? But my hope is that when they get older, like in hindsight, they'll be really grateful for them, right? And it's the same thing that my parents experienced. Like you do your best and at a certain point, you have to just let your kid go, you know, and that's really scary. But that's all you can do, right? Like at the end of the day, we will make our decisions and we will live our lives. and that's that, you know? So yeah, I don't know. I can't remember why I brought all that up, but.
No, I think it's just trying to figure out what the other side looks like. Right. I think the best answer I got was from my husband, who was like, cause I was like, what, like, I don't even know how to come out of all of this. Like, what's the point of all of this? Right. And he's like, it'll be when you watch your kids grow up and knowing they never had to feel any of those things.
Yeah. He's or like, if they felt you, them, they could talk to you about it. Like the doors were open. It's so different. Yeah.
It's like you may live with all of these things and they might never go away, right? Like the brown girl guilt, probably just going to like wallow in it for a while. But it's like, but like when you have kids and knowing that you did better than your parents and knowing that they'll never know what that feels like. Mm-hmm. And it's like, that's the privilege. Like that's the privilege, is knowing like they can't even relate to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because,
and part of that privilege
to like not pass it on.
Yeah. And part of that privilege, to circle it all back, comes from the fact that our parents like busted their asses to make their life here, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, it's as much as there's like intergenerational trauma, I think that with each generation, we're able to peel that away, you know? But we won't see the full effects of that until like five generations from now, you know? But to me, that's the hope, right? You know, like I have a niece who, like, for context, like this is my dad's sister passed away like before she even turned 50. And it was really hard on like the family. And her daughter now has her daughter, like a year and a half almost, right? And when she was pregnant, all of us were like, it's going to be a girl. We know, like, you know, like, you know, Foy's going to come back in our lives in some capacity. And her daughter is going to get to do all the things that my Foy couldn't do, you know? And just like, of course, like grief consumes you in so many ways. And there's like that sense of hope in the consequent generations, you know? And there are conversations that my cousin and her husband have about, like, when do we give her her phone? Like, all these different things that are just, it's so challenging to be a parent, right? Like, but what's, you know, but there will be things that they get to do for their kid that my Foy couldn't do for her own, you know? And that's the healing that happens with every generation. And, but, you know, sometimes healing comes with a really growing, hard pain. It's not this like you said, it's not this pastel meme all the time. Sometimes it's like really, really sitting in it and feeling like shit for a good amount of time before you see any type of fruit or like any end in sight, you know?
Yeah. Well, this has been a deeply sentimental episode. Around parents if they want to feel seen. But my last question is always the same. If you could leave those listening with some words of wisdom or a piece of advice, what would it be?
I think, you know, two things. Like, always seek to understand. Like, approach with curiosity, you know? And that's really hard to do sometimes. Like sometimes with my parents, I would be like, I don't give a fuck. Like what's going to come out of your mouth? I'm already mad. Like this is not the time, you know, like, but, you know, making that conscious decision whenever we have capacity to really try and just like listen in with curiosity and not just to confirm our own beliefs, you know? And also, and this is advice that many people have said to me, that I really had to implement into my life, was like, at the end of the day, it is our life to live. And if you're miserable, you're the one that bears the repercussions of that more than anybody else. You know, like in the times where I was like, what am I doing? I'm causing so much harm and pain in my family. Like, should I just walk away? They were like, you won't be happy. And the times where I like tried that and took a step back, like I was miserable, you know? So at the end of the day too, like it's this balance of acknowledging, you know, our community, And especially for our parents, like their experiences, their hard work, everything they've done, and also like fighting for our right to make decisions, you know, and fighting for our right to be happy, whatever that might mean, you know. What I say often about my current relationship is, you know, if we are no longer in each other's lives, like, I don't know what that future holds, right? But he has been such a blessing in my life that I feel like I've been able to heal so much of my just like frustrations about dating. Like, I've never felt so seen or so heard, so like just happy in a relationship as I have in the one that I am now, right? So even if the end game of this is that we are no longer in each other's lives, like, this has been such a blessing of an experience to have. And that nothing takes away from that, right? Like, I've learned so much in this process that whatever the outcome is, like, it doesn't outweigh that or take away from that, you know, even if, you know, we don't end up together.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't change anything, you know? And that's because I like consistently chose to respect and honor my parents and all these things, but I also stuck to, I'm not going to just end this, you know? And some days that's a lot harder than others, but I think it's really important to kind of stick to, you know? And as time has gone on, I'm like, I'm so happy that I did, because I mean, he's great. You know, I've learned so much. So yeah.
Yeah. I mean, fighting for the right person is never the wrong move. I feel like it really, when I think about all the decisions I've made in my life, like choosing my husband was one of the best ones, because while I, you know, I love my friends and my family and I love my therapist. And is that weird to say about your therapist?
But anyway, no.
as support systems, like no one is there more than your spouse who will make sure you come out on the other side of this journey. Mm-hmm. And having someone who like literally sees you at your good, bad, and ugly and is still forcing you in the right direction and never questioning their choice to be with you, no matter how much some days I feel like a complete screw up, like easily the best decision and the most important decision I made was to like fight to be there with him. And kind of what I personally always think is like, your parents didn't make all of these sacrifices and spend so much time probably being a little bit unhappy, or if not a lot unhappy, for you to be unhappy. They did all this because they wanted you to have a better life and for you to be happy. And even if your idea of happy might look a little different than they had planned, that still doesn't change the fact. Like, they didn't do all of this for you to end up miserable. So go take everything they did and like make something out of it, even if it means marrying the wrong person in their eyes. If anyone wanted to find you online, where could they find you?
There are a couple essays that I've written that are public. I can share a link to.
Yes, I will link it down in the show notes, your essays and things. Well, thank you so much for being a guest. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning in, guys. Make sure if you enjoyed this episode, you leave us a review on iTunes. You can find the show on all major streaming platforms. You can find me on Instagram at Disha.Mazeppa. You can shop my Etsy shop, Disha Mazeppa Designs. Find out everything you want to know about this show at DishaMazeppa.com. And if you or someone you know would like to be a guest, you can email bwwpspodcast@gmail.com. And I'll see you guys next time. Bye. This podcast is hosted and produced by Disha Mystery Mazeppa. Music for the show was created by Crexwell.